I'm not going to be able to do that.
This is Shirley Bradley and Lisa Fine at the Orioles Museum, and we're going to be talking with Wayne Nunheimer about real memories.
Last up was right. You had to have 30 years in order to realize anything. You didn't, when the government got through slashing us, I meant, the first thing, we'll say that I retired at 550. See, that was supposed to be my pension. Okay, the government says, we got a loophole here.
Oh.
We don't have to pay your union incentive. What did that mean to me? $300 right down the drain. Off from that $550. Then they said, well, you got 30 years in, so you're sitting prettier than the rest of them. I mean, because you've got your 30 years in, see?
Mm-hmm.
The poor fellow that's got 25 years in, say, maybe 25, 26, 27, maybe not quite 30.
Close enough.
See?
Yeah.
What is he going to get at the age of 62 or 65, if they prorated him like they did me, when they took away the 300. So, but it didn't hurt in a way, I mean, because I'll tell you why. The contract read, this was 550 until they put you 6 foot under the ground. All right. Yeah. So they put you 6 foot under the ground. All right. Now I said, what happens when I get to be 62? See, I mean, we had the retirement of 30 and out regardless of your age. If you go 49,
yeah,
it didn't make any difference.
Matter, yeah.
That's right. You still got your 550. See, I mean, you got your 550 until they put you 6 foot in the ground. I said, you see. Well, all right. what are you going to tell you? All right, the government, well, anyway, I mean, what happened to my pension when I was 62? Say I elected to retire at 62.
Maybe this is a good spot to stop and get the paperwork out of the way,
yeah.
I think.
Is that okay with you, Mr. Nunheimer?
Yeah.
Okay.
They'll give you a minute to think about it, and
yeah,
then we'll come back to it.
We want to take your tape off, Shirley, just for a second.
Yeah.
Okay. Usually what we do at the beginning when we start is just to get some background about the people who worked at Rio, you know, where they came from, what their families were like. First of all, if you were born here in Lansing, or if you came from somewhere else, where you worked at the Rio?
Yeah. Well, Chris, what do you want to know first? Where
were
I was
you
born?
Born here?
No, I was born in Bay City.
Bay City, Michigan?
Yeah,
okay.
Bay City, Michigan.
Uh-huh. Did were your parents farmers up there, or did they work in
No,
factories?
My dad worked at a foundry during World War I.
Uh-huh. In Bay City?
In Bay City, yes.
Okay.
And in 1918 when I come along.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. 1918. So
yeah.
you were a happy baby.
I was a World War One baby.
Okay. Were your dad's folks from the United States?
Oh yes. Father was born in Indiana. My mother was in Belding, Michigan.
Oh, your mom was from Belding.
Mm-hmm.
And did you go to school in Bay City?
Oh, no. When I was before I went to school, they moved to Lansing. But anyway, let's see. I didn't go to any school, no, in Bay City, no.
No, you moved
mm-hmm.
before then.
That's right.
But why did your parents move here?
Oh, that's a good question.
Maybe there weren't any jobs in Bay City. Is that possible?
Well, there were jobs there. My father was training at a boiler factory. I mean, that's he was working for 25 cents an hour, believe it or not, when they were making good money during World War I, I'm talking about.
Right.
See? He was working for 25 cents an hour. Apprenticeship. You might as well say it was an apprenticeship.
Right. He was learning the trade.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, how come I don't know why they moved to Lansing?
Maybe he had a better job here.
Well, evidently, he did, because, 1918, you see, the war was over at that moment.
Yeah. Right, it's just ending.
Yeah. So evidently, he come to Lansing then.
Mm-hmm. Well, he came when you were very small.
Right, okay. He must have come to work at Rio then, because I was only in the grade schools then. I was in the grade schools when we...
Here in Lansing.
In Lansing, yeah.
And your father came and worked at the Rio.
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah, I think he worked, because he did put in, what was it, 40 years anyway.
Your dad worked 40 years at Rio.
Yeah. Yeah, you see, from the World War I up to 1937, he worked at Rio, see?
Okay.
He worked at Rio. All right, at that time, Rio was going to go broke that time, too. If it hadn't been for World War II, they would have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They would have went broke. They would have went out of existence, you see.
Yes.
And so my father was there. I mean, he was still working. He had 21 years in at that time. Now, maybe you can figure up now. But
21 years when World War I?
From World War I up to 1937, see, or... Just pretty near the outbreak of World War II.
Okay. So he started, you guys must have moved here, right? After
well,
you were born.
There, yes. Yeah, you're right there.
Right after you were born.
Because in, as I say, when I was going into grade school, Kalamazoo Street School. Well, I went in there, then of course I went to West Georgia.
Yeah.
Then to Old Central. That's where I graduated. I mean, I graduated out of Central.
What was your dad's name?
William.
William, not Donner.
Mm-hmm.
What did he do in the plant?
He was a sheet metal layout. I can't tell you too much about it. I can tell you something. I meant, say you wanted a cabinet put in here.
Mm-hmm.
Out of metal. You know, I mean, say it's, he would lay out the plans on how to make it, see?
Mm-hmm. So he was very skilled.
Right. That was
skilled
worker.
Yep.
He was a skilled trade.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't.
Oh.
He wasn't at Rio. I was just a common laborer.
Yeah.
I'm just a common laborer.
He was there during the big strike then, or just right
You're
now?
Right. You're right. But the sit-down.
The sit-down
the strike.
Do you remember anything of that? What, that he might have said?
I can remember vaguely, they had to stay in the plant, see, they locked all the doors, and they stayed in the plant, and you fed them through the windows.
Mm-hmm. You were a teenager then, you were probably still in high school.
Well, yeah, I must have been.
Yeah.
And I don't remember how old I was at that time.
Did you go down with your mother to feed him through the windows?
Well, I must have. Because, I mean, he stayed there night and day, naturally. I mean, they all did.
Mm-hmm. He did. He participated.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Was he in favor of it? Or did he do it because he felt he had to?
Yes. Because at this time, the Union was not noted. You see, I mean, they were fighting to get...
The Union.
To get the Union in here, yes.
And he wanted the Union.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Because, let me tell you something. The Rio used to be called the old soldier's home. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if you had a job there, it was easy. You know, I mean, not like General Motors. I mean, put somebody on the line over on General Motors and you earned some money.
Yeah.
There was a car wreck one right after the other. Now, the Rio was a little different. I mean, that's why they got the name of the old soldier's home.
Who called it the old soldier's home?
Don't ask me.
maybe everybody, huh?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well,
did the workers call it that too?
Oh, sure.
Oh, okay.
Because even at General Motors, you know, they say you work at the old soldier's home, huh?
Because things came along
sure.
the line sooner.
It was so much different, you see. But Rio was trying to get a union started during the sit-down strike.
Right.
They were trying to get it to...
If it was so easy, what'd they want the union for?
Well, it was easy and it wasn't.
Okay.
I meant they had time-study men that would get behind a post and watch you work. They figured that your job was a little bit too easy.
I see.
So they'll say, what can we do to make it harder? See?
Mm-hmm. How can we get more production out of this person?
Right. That's right. That was the whole thing in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. It was trying to get more production out of everybody.
Mm-hmm. Did work change a lot in the 20s that the men were upset about? Or what? Maybe they were worried about the conditions from the 30s, you know, laid off and bad times.
Well, that I can't tell you.
You don't know. Mm-hmm. Your dad, you don't remember your dad saying anything about those things. Okay.
No. So now,
but you do know, you didn't mention about the time study. The
time that's
study
right.
Guy.
Well, that was the reason the union
came
got
in,
yeah. They wanted to close shop. That is,
the management. Wanted to close shop.
No.
The workers
wanted to close shop.
Wanted to close shop because, you see, that, you know what that means, don't you?
Sure. Yes.
All right.
Only the union in there. All union.
That's
members.
Right. Well, you mean you had to join the union
right.
whether you wanted to or not.
Right.
Or you didn't have a job. See, I mean, that's what I understand. You know, I mean, if you understand what a coal shop is.
Yes.
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 All right.
I do. And did your dad think things improved after the strike when they got the union in?
Yes, it did, because they had stewards then. I mean, if you had a problem, you could go to the stewards.
Okay.
And he could go to management then. You see, they would go to management.
So you had recourse.
That's right.
For your grievances.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you had.
Okay. Did your dad and your family, when he was a worker there, participate in all the activities at the Rio?
Yeah.
You know, the clubhouse and the sports teams and the band
Let
and all that.
Let me get to that.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's why Rio was always noted as a kind of a family group.
Okay.
We had picnics.
Mm-hmm.
You say the clubhouse was there. We had activities there because I can remember when I was in grade school going to movies every Wednesday and Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to buy 1 cent candy or 5 cent candy bars.
Oh, pretty good.
I can remember that.
In the concession, they had a concession.
That's right, yeah. That, and it was when they had penny candy.
Yeah.
And 5 cent candy bars. Yeah, I mean they were not 40 cents, no.
And they were bigger candy bars too.
Yeah. Well, that way, you see, okay, I went all through school. Then I graduated in 1937.
Same year as the strike.
Right.
Hmm.
Well, wait a minute.
Yeah, that was the...
Can't
meeting.
Be right then. That
okay.
can't be right then.
The strike
was
March,
before that.
March 37.
Yeah.
March 37.
Because the strike was over.
When you graduated?
Well, yeah.
Well, you must have graduated later that spring.
Yeah,
did you remember
June.
The Lansing Labor Holiday when everything closed down downtown?
Yeah, I can remember that.
Remember... That was the same year as the strike.
Were you downtown at that time, maybe, from high school?
Not unless they wanted the band.
Oh, you were in the band.
Playing the band.
What did you play?
I played the trumpet. Yeah.
You played a trumpet.
Oh,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I started in the seventh grade. Yeah, seventh grade to learn to play an instrument.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Going back to the.
All right.
I'm sorry, Mr. Newman.
All right.
Going back to the clubhouse and the activities there. Besides the shows, do you remember going there for anything else?
Dances. Yeah, they would have dances there.
You went there as a teenager for the dances?
I don't know as I ever went.
Oh,
I mean,
but you know that other people...
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't know if my father went. I mean, they could have. Mm-hmm. He could have went with his mother.
Mm-hmm. How about sports teams that baseball? Because the Rio had a real good baseball city league team.
Your dad didn't play on the team?
Oh,
either.
No. The only activity was just going to the clubhouse for taking me to the movies, yeah.
Okay.
Because you see, I mean, you had to have a pass in order to get in the movies, you know.
And then it was free.
Yeah.
It was free.
That's right. Then it was free, yeah. But you had something to show that you was a real worker there,
right.
See.
Right.
Of course, I don't know how many passed their cards on down to somebody.
Did your mom work outside of the house?
Well, recall playing the organ.
She played at church?
Yeah, for 8 years.
Well, that's work.
Nice. That's where you got your musical ability.
That's right.
Right.
Well, and my father played the trombone.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he was in the band. They were both, in fact, that's...
In the Rio band?
No. Oh. No, it was in their high school. I mean... And if you want to go way back into history, my grandfather was captain of the Salvation Army.
In
Bellevue, around Belding, around...
Oh, his mother's side.
He was one of them ones that they made him travel.
Oh.
My mother said she had, when she was in school, had to get her lessons after she quit playing the piano for him.
Mm-hmm. When they went around.
Yeah. Yeah, she said she spent many a time. Well, as I say, I mean, and at that time, Salvation Army, I mean, if you could just carry a tube, he was called a singer.
Oh, is that right?
She says, I played for many people that didn't know what they were singing, but... No, she played it for 8 years down to South Baptist Church, which
right.
was
right
my home. That was my my church, too.
Because
I was still in grade school when she was playing the organ. So I was...
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I don't have any.
Oh, you were the only kid, huh?
I'm a spoiled brat.
Wow,
right?
You had a lot of attention.
I'm spoiled.
Oh.
According to my wife.
Well, no, that may or not may not
well,
be true.
She came from a family of nine.
Oh my.
So she did think you were spoiled.
Oh, so that's why she always said I was a spoiled brat.
Does she still say that?
Well, yes and no.
Did your mom and dad own a home?
Oh, yeah.
They did?
Yeah, we bought a house at 910 West Hillsville, which was a nice neighborhood, but not, no.
Yes, it was then, wasn't it? That wasn't too far from our
No, by, and by in 37, up to 37, see? I mean, that's because Dad could see the handwriting on the wall about Rio going broke, see?
Oh, it could.
Well, then, at that time, he had a brother that, worked for the Bureau of Engraving in Washington.
Sure.
Yeah.
At the Mint.
Yeah. And he was visiting us, and he said, Dad, he said, well, hi, he said, you've got so many years of experience in sheet metal work, why don't you write into the government and ask them if they've got a job? So we did. Well, we come back. He said, yes.
Hmm.
If you want to go to Norfolk, Virginia. Well, he didn't want to go, but gee whiz, that was the only option they had.
Yeah.
So, he couldn't get into the Olds. I mean, he couldn't get into General Motors.
They just weren't hiring?
That's right, they weren't hiring at that time, see. So, he did go down to Virginia. I mean,
he left the family?
Yeah, oh yeah, he left me here, because I say, I was just out of high school.
Right.
Got a job at Arbaugh's, making $15 a week.
Oh, what did you do at Arbaugh's?
I was the helper on the furniture wagon.
On the furniture wagon? Oh, to deliver.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I had, I had just a Saturday job there, working in that bakery. You know, I had a bakery down
in
the basement.
Yes, they did, down in the basement.
Yeah. Well, I was just helping stock the shelf, and if they got too busy, I had to wait on customers, see? But anyway, I was making, then finally this fellow that was a helper on the furniture wagon quit. So, DeVries, that was Andy DeVries, he was the employer.
Mm.
He said to me, I mean, he said, you want a job? I mean, you want a job? And so I said, well, sure. And I said, I'll take a steady job. That would be a steady job, see? I mean, not just working Saturdays. So, he said, you have to work on the furniture wagon. And I said, okay, that's all right. So I did. But $15 a week, but the driver was only making $35. He was only making $35, so what the heck?
Those were good wages for that time, though.
Well, I guess they were. I mean, I didn't realize it. I mean, I guess I just took it that was the average wage, I mean,
sure.
of everybody.
It wasn't easy to find a job in 1937
either. No,
no,
well,
it sure
I say,
wasn't.
Okay, get back to my father. He went down to Virginia and looked the job over. It was a shipbuilding, you know what I mean, in the Norfolk Navy Yard. And he looked the job over on it, and I thought, well, gee whiz, it's right nice. I mean, it was a good job. So he wrote back. He said, I'm going to take the job. He said, I'll start looking for a house. And here I was, just out of high school. So he said to me, he said, well, you haven't got a very good job at our board there. He said, why don't you come on down and bring mother down? I mean, why don't you come on down here, I mean, and work, try to get a job in the Navy right here.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, what have I got to lose? Nothing. So we made arrangements to move. I mean, we got all arrangements to move, and the first stop we made, was to my uncle's there. I mean, my uncle really can't have told Dad to get the job at the Bureau of Engraving,
right.
See, I mean, in the government. So after that, well, then we went on down to Virginia, then, where Dad was. Well, he had a house in the meantime. So I applied for a job, didn't have any experience. I mean, I was nothing. So Dad said, well, why don't you go in as a sheet metal helper? So I did, and I got my job in 1937, see?
Down in Norfolk.
Yeah, down in Northern Virginia. So, well, as you know, the air was just pretty near, the war was just breaking. I mean, it was getting serious, you know. I mean, it was getting a little serious.
Right.
So it wasn't much of a job for me to get a job at the Navy Yard, see, because they wanted the ships. See, they wanted them first before they ever contracted trucks for real, you know what I mean, before the Army ever got into trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, we worked there. I worked for the government, and it was a good paying job, but if we'd have stayed here in Michigan, we'd have been money-wise better off. Because they were working Sunday. We were working Sundays for double time.
Mm-hmm.
The government don't believe in paying double time.
At least they didn't then.
No, they didn't.
Now they have to.
Yeah. So we worked for time and a half. We worked for time and a half.
Was that job union down there?
No.
So that's the difference.
No, that's right. There was no union shops down there.
Right.
So I come back for a vacation when I did find, you know, during, well, let's say it was in 19...
Had the Second World War started yet?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you see, because then it fools you to your job.
Oh, they needed the work.
Yeah, you see, I mean, after about 1940-41, you were frozen, see?
I see.
Even in here in Michigan.
Right.
Yeah, even in Michigan. We're talking too long? Is it
no,
too
I'm
long?
Just trying to check to see if this is working at all.
So.
Is it going? Can you see the tape recording?
Yeah, go ahead. They were, well, I see, you were frozen to your job. So, after a while, we got to, as I say, about 42. See, I had, in other words, my war years were from 1940 to 44.
Down in Virginia?
In Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay.
For 3 years. It was 3 or 4 years in there, see. But anyway, I got back up to Michigan for a vacation. And I went to my aunt's. I went to my aunt there and stayed there with them, see.
Mm-hmm.
I got to find out that, gee whiz, you guys were working for double time down here on Sundays, you see.
At the Rio.
Yeah. So I went back and I said to Dad, I said, boy, I said, we're losing money. Can't even fit. And I told him, I said, they're getting double time for Sunday up here. So actually, of course, I mean, you was actually close to your job, but my mother if everyone has ever been in the state of Virginia, I mean, it's kind of damp.
Hot and humid.
It's hot and humid, yes, especially if you go to Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
I mean, I got, you can get sunburned with just the wind blowing.
So
So my dad went to the head of the Navy out there, I mean, the captain, they call him Admiral. Anyway, he used Mother's excuse to get back to Virginia, see? I mean, to get unfrozen from your job.
Because her health was, perhaps.
Maybe I shouldn't be saying this.
Oh, that's all right. I don't think they're going to come along now and fight you.
When it came to me, that was a horse of another color.
Oh.
Yeah, they said to me, you're single. What's the matter with you? I mean, they said, you're not married. Why do you want to move? Why do you want to leave here? I told him, I said, this is not a long story, but anyway, I'll cut it short. But anyway, they want to know why I wanted to go back to Virginia. Michigan, yes, sir. They said, you're single? And wait a minute. He said, wait a minute. What are you going to do, open up a bar? Boy, I was a little teed that time, and I said to him, now listen. I said, would you like a new car? Oh, sure. I said, so do I. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me like something's happened up in Michigan there that's the automobile state. That something happened that they can't make passenger cars anymore. But they're making army trucks. He said, and you intend to get a job military. I said, yeah. Okay, he said, I guess I'll let you go then. He said, they released me, see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was knew you were going to do military work up there. Yeah.
So that was in 1944, okay, then, 40, I had 30 years in, okay, it was in 1940, I think it was then, yeah. I went to work at Rio.
In 1940? You started in Rio in 1940?
All right, let's see. I retired in 75.
And you had 40 years?
Thirty. So that man would make it 40.
45, man. Yeah, the war was almost over.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's right, it was. Because I went back into making trucks.
Oh, regular trucks.
Yeah.
So you came back to Rio and Lansing and you got a job at the Rio.
Right. Yeah.
Didn't have any.
So did my father.
He came back to the
Rio.
Yeah,
that's where he got more than he had 21 years up to 37.
Mm-hmm.
Then he worked the balance of 40 years, I'd say. Because, there was Rio give us father and son 70 years of good living. I think that's what was printed one time. I've forgotten now.
The seniority between the two of you.
Yeah. Yeah, seniority between the two of
you.
Yeah.
You had 30, so he must have had 40.
40, yeah. He did have 40, because you're right.
So
I know he had more than I did, anyway.
His seniority then carried right on.
What they did. I mean, because, the employer, he used to work with Dad, they worked with Dad, and so they did let my father pick up the 21 years and go on.
Great.
See?
Gee, I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, it was. And me, I was just, I did make I jumped from a mechanic, from a helper to a mechanic. That's what they used to call they called you a mechanic. If you was a regular sheet metal, it's like a sheet metal worker.
Is that what you wore when you started in Rio again, 1945, sheet metal worker?
Yeah. You better try and get into put in a good word for him. He says, put in for the sheet metal shop.
Okay. And that's where you were in sheet
metal?
That's
where I first had a job.
What'd you do there?
I made, well, at first, well, see, we had pieces of metal like this, and it had a template we put over top of it. All right, maybe it had some holes in it, and you were supposed to prick punch them holes. What they were going to do later on was somebody else was going to drill them holes out.
See. You marked where they had to drill.
I had to mark where they, that's what they call prick punching, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I had to prick punch this template. From this template, see? Well,
and
then...
this was for the trucks?
Yes, that's
okay.
Right. Then they were making, well, they were still making military trucks too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, after four, I see, when did they start making the regular commercial truck?
Probably 46.
That's right. I mean, probably, yeah.
They had to finish up their military contract.
Yeah, you're right. They were still, because, all right, when I got to, I mean, after this here prick punching deal, I meant they broke me in on what they call a spot welder.
Spot welder.
All right, yeah. It's a machine that comes down with two copper points, I mean, and heats your metal and glues it together, in other words.
Oh, okay.
That's what it does, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yes, it is. I mean, well, it was quite fun. Well, they put me on making fender braces for the commercial truck.
Oh.
And I had three different types, I mean, to make, you see. I mean, three different types to make. Well, that lasted, I don't know how long, but anyway, finally they said, well, we're going to ship your job up to Department 28. It's another spot welding place. I mean, they had just a few there. They had just a few spot welders. So, I got shipped up to 28. Well, I had the option to go with the job or stay where I was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I kind of liked the job, so I went with it.
Mm-hmm. And you were making pretty good money there of what you were doing?
We never did pay an awful lot. I mean, but we did get within, 30 cents, 40 cents of General Motors anyway. You know, I meant hourly weekend work of work, see?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't think about going over there, though, for the better wages.
Pardon
for you, would, you never thought about leaving Rio to go to General Motors to get the better wages?
No, because I had seniority that was pretty safe. That is, if when it comes to a layoff, see.
Mm-hmm. You felt more secure at
yeah,
Rio?
You're right. You're right. You see, I mean, that's the reason why I never changed. I mean, because I had a good job. Gee whiz, it seemed like you got 5 years in, 6 years in, 7 years, pretty had 10.
Sure.
See? You go over to General Motors, I mean, you start from the bottom again,
right.
See? So, anyway, on Department 28, I was still making my fender braces. Then, the military oil pan job came along.
Mm-hmm.
And my foreman, old Joe Corey, where he is nowadays, I don't know. I don't know whether he's alive or not. I think maybe he's in Detroit. Anyway, that's water under the bridge.
But it's interesting to know who you worked for and with.
Well, Guy Heck was my very first foreman.
Guy Heck?
Yeah.
Heck, H-A-C-K?
Well, I think that's the way he pronounced it, yeah.
Okay.
Of course, he's gone now. I mean, he's
mm-hmm.
gone now. But he was my first foreman, you see, and he knew my dad, you know, I mean,
uh-huh.
because they worked together, I mean, they worked, and then Guy Heck came foreman then, see, during the war, then he became foreman, he moved up, see,
mm-hmm.
so he knew my father, so that's really, that was a big boost to getting me in there first,
mm-hmm.
at first, you know, but, as I say, they were hiring, they said if he had one arm.
Oh, so they really wanted workers.
That's right. Yeah, because it was kind of hard to get workers. I don't know. Well, let me put it this way. Good help.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard to get good help. I mean, dependable help.
What'd your dad do when he came back to Rio? The same thing he did
before? Same thing. He was on that sheet metal layout.
Sheet metal layout.
Yeah. He was on the sheet metal layout.
Did he ever become foreman?
No.
He didn't either?
No. Because, see, after, let's see. No, he never did. No, he just accepted the job. He never wanted the responsibility.
Right.
And he was happy doing what he was doing.
There was too many foremen, you know. I mean, there were made foremen that were called, well, we got his Robert Hall suit.
Oh. they got fancy, huh?
Well, no.
A little resentment, maybe?
Well, no, I wouldn't say resentment, no. But they were fly-by-nights, or I mean, or thought they knew more than what.
Oh, I see.
What was required, you know, I mean, so, well, anyway. Mm. And that's what they said, the remark that they got their Robert Hall suits, you know.
That's interesting.
It was cheap, see.
Oh, cheap suit.
Yeah,
that's right, that was a discount.
Yeah, yeah, see, that was a cheap, place to buy suits, see.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, all right, this offhand job came along. It was to put a baffle in there to separate, I don't know, anyway. And they brought in a new spot welder, which was called, I mean, it was like a sewing machine.
Oh, a new machine.
Bing, 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 bing. It's like going, all you had to do was hold a pedal down.
Oh, and it did a roll.
That's right. It went just like a sewing machine.
I see.
Well, who was to get that job? They asked me if I wanted it. I could have turned it down, but I tried it out. And I thought it was kind of fascinating because you started this way, went on the edge of the pan, across the bottom, and up again.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
See?
Mm-hmm.
Going just like a sewing machine, you see?
Down one side, across the bottom, and up the other side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Making those holes.
I thought it was quite interesting, you know. I mean, see, the machine, all you had to do was step the pedal. Mm-hmm.
Was it automated? It was a smart machine, right? I mean,
yeah.
A new kind of machine.
No, you had set it.
You set it yourself.
That's right.
Okay.
You had to set the heat and the speed of the sewing machine.
I see. Okay.
I mean, you can make it slower or you can make it faster. I meant.
So you had to learn more about the machine.
That's right. Yeah, it was a new machine that they brought in. You see, it was a new machine they brought in.
Did they only bring in the one or what?
That's right. Because. At that time, you know, they weren't making so many military. It was a
commercial.
It was filling up the order, you know. We may get another order for 50, 100, or 500, you know, military trucks.
Right.
So, anyway, after, they wanted to know if I wanted the job. Well, I stayed with the job for, a long time, because it kept me busy. Because, I mean, that was a job. Because after I got through welding it in, they put it onto a test to fill it up with air, or then they put soap on it, where I welded it, to see if it leaked.
Oh,
see? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was something that I had to learn. As you say, maybe those were about an eighth of an inch apart. I had to learn how not just to put it all in one spot. Because you could burn through it.
Sounds kind of tricky.
Well,
you gotta learn the right touch.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that was it.
Did it take long to learn there?
No, because at the time you slowed the thing down, and
gotcha.
When you could get your rhythm, I mean, you could get the how it was to be run through the machine.
Mm-hmm. And then all you had to do was speed it up.
Yeah, that's right. After you got more acquainted with the machine, let's say, faster you could go.
Sure.
Did you have a production?
I was
Yes, ma'am. You had so many to make in an hour. That's right. So, let's see, when did we outlaw piecework?
It was in the late 40s.
I was saying, I can't remember when, but I know it was one of our contracts. I mean, that we wanted to outlaw piecework.
Right, so I think it was in the late 40s sometime.
I think
right?
So too, because I don't think Hoyt was owner. I don't think White was owner of us yet.
Yeah, it was still real motor cars.
It was still a real, It was still real.
Mm-hmm. How'd you feel about that? Were you in favor of that change to the hourly, or did you, would you have rather?
Oh, yes, yes.
You were in favor?
Because, oh, yes, everybody was. Because if we had, well, the old time radio we have, he's dead, so he can't.
He can't go back and.
No, he can't come back on us now. I mean, around to me. Because I'm not, you know, because we had to do everything we had to do to make a decent rate.
Right.
We had to figure, in other words, fool the rate setter if you could. If you could. But a lot of times you couldn't, because you come back with a rate that you could stand there 8 hours and you still couldn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could just be there all 8 hours working all the time. Not saying that you got your 10-minute break or you had your coffee break or nothing, you see. You couldn't make your rate.
He said it too.
Of course,
hard.
Your foreman would say, well, how come you can't make the rate? You know.
Maybe we should find
he
something.
He says, yeah, well, that's right. They say, well, what can we do? I mean, we'll get the rate setter back up here again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe he'd give you a break and maybe he wouldn't.
Yeah.
Well, the rate setter that we had, he knew my dad and he knew me then. I mean, from my dad, see?
Mm-hmm. It kind of helps.
Yeah. I mean, he knew. That's why I said we're a family. Everybody knows everybody, see?
Right.
Everybody knows everybody, you see? And then I say it. Even on them picnics, we had a good time. I mean, because it's the expense of the real, but I mean, they done it for your workers,
mm-hmm.
see?
Mm-hmm.
They done it for your workers. I mean, that's why we were calling a family. Well, anyway, getting back to my oil pan job, well, after I had mastered the thing and could make the rate. See, I could make the rate then.
Mm.
Somebody got the bright idea, let's move this job over to the mortar plant. Here we go again. Do you or do you not?
Want to come with us.
Yeah. As I said to him, I said, well, I kind of let, they said, well, no, all right, I said, let's do it this way then. You go over there, and you run the job, and they will give you somebody to break in.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Then you can come back here. You can come back to your department. Okay. I swallowed that. I said, okay, that's good. Good governor. I went over there for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, pretty near a year.
No change.
Still no break-in fellow.
They didn't give you anyone to break in?
No.
They liked what you were doing. They didn't
want to leave. You're right. That's why I said that they liked what, I was responsible. I mean, I was dependable. And I didn't like the motor plant anyway. Because that floor that they had over there was laid in little, like bricks, wooden bricks.
Wooden bricks?
Yeah. And they got, of course, the mortar plant was always, that's how come they claim that we contaminated the ground.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
The mortar plant. Because we used oil, or we had oil on the floor, or we had...
Soaked down
through? Yeah.
Oh.
So that's why they said that we contaminated the ground over there.
Under the reel in that corner.
Where O'Leary is now, yeah.
That's where the motor plant was.
Well, the motor plant was there. It runs all the way to the railroad track. It went all the way back to the railroad track,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So you didn't like working there because of that floor?
That's right, I didn't.
Was it hard to stand on? You mean it was slippery?
Well, it wasn't slippery. It wasn't that dangerous. I mean, it wasn't that dangerous, but you just... Well, you were at your wife though. I mean, you come home with your shoes on.
Oh, and you're all covered with oil, and you track in the house.
She met me at the door and said, "Hey, little boy, take your shoes off." Well, as I say, pretty near a year went by, and I went to the foreman and said, "Hey, listen, I think I've been over here long enough, He finally agreed with me anyway, and so I finally got my break-in fellow. Well, I got back to 28. Well, we had Yeah, I still got, besides my fender brace, I made some parts for the cab, you know, I mean, what I meant by maybe the vent door they had in the side of the hood.
Oh, okay.
And maybe the glove-box door. I mean, you had a different job, you see.
So it was a variety.
That was the difference between working for Rio and General Motors. General Motors, you had, you put a bolt in hole number 99, bolt 99 in hole 99.
And that was it.
And you did it forever.
Yeah, that's right. You done it right forever, right. Rio, we had a variety, a variety of jobs.
It kept you
on your toes. I mean, but it made it nice for, well, the foreman, if he liked you, you know what I mean, because he didn't learn those jobs. See, you may have a template, I mean, a jig, we call it a jig, to put your material in, you see, I mean, and to form the piece that jig is supposed to do.
I see.
See, we had that, it made it nice for the, like me, I mean, when work got so slack, I mean, I had five or six men under me. I had to set up their job and get the material in and get the right jig, and they would show them how to run it. See, show them how to run on the job, and then I'd turn them loose. Well, if they made the mistake, it was their fault, not mine. I mean, if I didn't explain it right enough, well, I mean, they could blame me. But anyway, as it got down to this point where I was the only one in the department.
Who knew what was going on?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I knew those jigs from time to time, you see. The foreman didn't, well, he relied on me to do it, see.
Right.
He'd say, well, you run 99B3, run that job. You know, he said, well, you got the stock? If we got the stock out in the stock room, I'd have to go out and see. The only thing is that we'd have a record where that stock would be, you know, so I didn't have to run over the whole floor looking for that. I just had to go to, they said it was in Bay 3 or Bay 4 or...
That's where it would be.
Yeah, that's where the material to be run, see.
So then you get a stock handler to bring up what you need.
Well, I done it myself,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, you did it yourself.
I had to be my own truck driver.
Oh, really?
Old truck driver and setup man. I was termed as a setup thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
How was your father still working there at this time while you were going through these changes with the Department 28 at the motor shop?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He got moved around from, you remember there used to be a fire barn on the corner of Baker and Washington?
Yes,
yeah.
I do.
That was, they finally tore that down and gave it to the Rio.
Oh.
Well, he worked there for quite a while. Then they moved his department up to the, press room. The press room, yeah. And they made, of course, in the meantime, I think the lawnmower came down in there. See, the lawnmower.
Oh, yes.
See, the lawnmower department came down in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to careful. You see, but that's after the military was really done. It's when the lawnmower moved in. I mean, they started making lawnmowers.
Mm-hmm.
They started making lawnmowers. They would have had a good market if Sears Roebuck wanted them to make the lawnmower. But
they did.
Sears said, we got to put the name Sears on your product.
Oh.
And the Rio said, no way, Buster.
We're proud of what we do and we want to
learn. No way, that's right. And I told you before, they experimented with a remote control lawnmower.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Hmm.
They had one, they finally engineered a remote control that you could stand on your steps run that lawnmower around the thing, you see.
I'd like that.
But this here, the rub come in when they started figuring out how much it was going
to cost to the consumer.
Yeah. They said, we can't do it.
Yeah.
So they made about, I don't know how many made one, maybe 5, maybe 10.
Oh, so if they're around somewhere, they're collector's items then.
I got my doubts, but you're right.
Oh. They made power mowers.
Yeah, they made power, that's
and push,
right.
And push mowers too?
Yeah, because they made the real type. Remember the old, the real type,
too.
Yeah, Bill. With, before they came out with, no, they never did make a rotary.
Oh, they didn't?
I didn't think so, no.
Mm. We've got several lawnmowers out here in the storage, I think. Because
they put the motor on top of that reel.
Yes.
And they, I don't know. Because that was out of my department. I mean,
sure.
I was nowhere.
That's okay.
I was nowhere. The only time I got there is I'd take a walk. They went down there just to see what they were doing, you know. See that line on the lawnmower. So.
Did you put through any grievances while you were working at Rio? No, I didn't.
No, because after we got law and peace work, you worked. I meant, but you had a leg to stand on. I meant, you didn't have to really tear into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? As you say, make so many pieces an hour.
And that was, it was reasonable.
Even after we outlawed the piecework, I mean, you tried to get a job timed out, they still wouldn't give you a break. They always, as I say, I mean, whenever they timed a job out, you know, they might think that, well, maybe I did overrate that job.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they would try to come up and back at you or when you was running that job, just to see how you were running it, see?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he'd say, hey, you're doing that different than the way that was timed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you going to do when you try to beat the time rate setter?
Yeah, and they said, see, they changed the rate.
Of course, he would see it. Well, you're trying to get it rated. And he might see, well, this piece, you could do away without moving that piece over here.
Wasted
see?
Motion.
Yeah. He was smart enough to see that.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
We talked to the guy who did that, Calvin Chamberlain.
Well, this wasn't the film we had.
Oh, okay. He was one of the time study guys there.
Yeah. Well, I know, but there wasn't a good word put in for any of them.
No, I know. He told us that, too.
Yeah, I heard that.
Hey, we had one fellow that he rated a job in an arc welder. We had, now you know the difference between arc welding and front welding. Arc welding is where you have to put a rod in a holder and you run a bead along this way.
Okay.
See, you have a helmet.
Oh,
you
right.
Got to have a helmet with a CITO, you
right.
Know. Yeah.
Right, visor.
Yeah, because that was too bright of a light to watch.
Right.
Oh, right. Okay.
Well, anyway, we had one of our arc welders. This very said we had come up there. He timed the job out. And he said, after the rate setter got gone, he said, you know how many pieces you got to do an hour? No. He told him. The rate setter, he'd been running this job before. They got a rate, you see. He says, you mean to tell me I got to put out that many? He says, you're crazy. He says, do you go deer hunting? He said, I'd like to know where you're going. He said, I'd put a bullet past your ear.
Oh.
Don't need to pray, yeah, but...
Well,
yeah,
so
he's still alive.
Any,
the one that
so.
Said that is still alive. Well, of course, it wasn't no hush-hush. Everybody knew it. I mean...
I'm sure other people felt the
but,
same way,
we've heard
too.
Some stories.
But he said, I'd like to put a bullet past your ear.
But you said even though sometimes the rate setters weren't fair for your job too, you never put a grievance through for the union.
Well, no, because time I got a poor paying job that I even rated.
Mm-hmm.
We had outlawed piecework. I mean, they'd outlawed piecework, but still, they still wanted to know how many pieces you could do an hour.
Still had production.
That's right. Just so you couldn't come up there and sit down on the job
right.
And say,
right.
Hey.
But you thought production was fair.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
For
well,
what
I
you
never,
were doing at least.
Yeah, what I was doing, yeah. Because maybe I could make it, but But still, no, that isn't the way to look at it. How about that poor fellow that has to take your place, you know, I mean, say that you have to give up that job. I mean, he runs it, you know, and he can't do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had some women down in the press room that Brother Jones, nobody could keep up with.
Yeah, right.
They were, had nimble fingers. They had nimble fingers. I mean, they weren't all thumbs. See? Well, we had, they had one down there.
But the guys didn't like that.
Yeah, there was one girl down there that she was really a humdinger. And they didn't want her to get a job to be rated.
Oh, because then they'd have to do what
right,
she could do.
Right, you're right. They might fall into their lap someday, see? I mean, so, but we did have one girl down there. I mean, we didn't have too many girls. I think there's only about three or four girls that worked in that press department, because that's a dangerous place.
Yep, it is.
And that machinery that we had down there, I think it fell off Noah's Ark.
Yes, you had very old machinery.
We did. I mean, they were dangerous.
Yep.
Even though they had a safety department there that came down and said, well, you should put, say, you had a strap threatened to your arm, you put the piece underneath there, and maybe something happened before this arm would drag your arm back, this strap, you would come up with minus a finger.
Oh, dear. And you didn't have guards and things maybe across where your fingers couldn't slide in?
Yeah, guards. As I say, I mean, they tried to make them
as safe as they could,
but there were some machines that you just took a chance.
Yeah, I understand that.
Stuck your hand under there. So anyway, well, I stayed in department, well, wait a minute, 28, I was again transferred again over to Baker Street, uptown, what they used to call the old enameling room.
The enameling room?
Yeah, when they had, when they was making passenger cars.
Okay. That's where they did the painting?
Well, yeah, they done very little dip tank parts, you know, I mean, run
mm-hmm.
through a dip tank.
Mm-hmm.
But they did run some of those, I mean, for that passenger car. But, I don't know, I mean, it's just, it, I don't know.
Would that have been for the parts of the passenger or for the body itself?
The body, no.
This would have been for the
parts?
No,
okay. They never did. They never did rust proof their bodies too good, I never thought. But, of course, that was a truck. But the 36 was the last passenger car that
right.
went down the line.
Right.
And that was too much of a handmade car.
It cost too much.
The machinery that built the thing, it was too old. I mean, they never modernized like General Motors. See?
Didn't put the money back into the
shop. That's right. That's how come they didn't make a passenger car. That's why that fell through.
Mm-hmm. And people weren't buying cars much in 35, 36 either.
Well, my dad had one, and I was king of the road to have that thing.
Was
that
a Rio? Was that a Rio?
Yes.
Aha.
Your dad had a Rio.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
What model did he have? Do you remember?
Well, the it's the one that says, see, the starter was on the clutch.
Oh. Oh, that's right. Push that down.
Yeah, you push the clutch in. See, you push the clutch in, and
sure.
That was your starter.
Oh, gosh, that kicks me back.
Yeah, me too, because, I mean, I was in high school then, too. I mean, you know, and, oh, boy, if you owned a reel, your dad must have been worth some money.
that's what your friends thought?
You're right. Yeah.
That the prestige?
Because, see, the reel and the Buick were two of a kind. I mean, they were, in other words, if you went down, you didn't work at the Rio, didn't get any discount, you went down to buy a Flying Cloud. Yeah, that was a Flying Cloud. They call them Rio Flying Clouds.
Yeah, that was the deluxe car.
All right. And they'd say, okay, you have to plank out $1,000. Well, $1,000 in that time.
That was a
that's
lot
when
of
you could buy a Ford for $777.
Oh.
You remember the signs we used to see up on the highway?
No.
777, the Chevrolet was 777. The Let's see, the Ford. All right, just the Ford and Chevrolet. That's right. They were running. I forgot about Chrysler now. I mean, what?
Dodge.
I think they had a Dodge, but I don't remember the price of that. All I remember is the Ford and Chevrolet. They were 777.
Is that
okay?
Right?
My dad could buy that Flying Cloud with his discount for 777.
Oh.
So you see. That's why Dad bought the Flying Cloud.
It was a nice employee discount
right.
product.
And you see, when you see, you could buy that for $777 instead of $1,000.
You bet.
Well,
plus he was driving something he helped me.
That's right. I hate to be truthful with you, but I mean I was the one to put 20,000 miles on the car. By myself.
How long did that car stay in the family? Long time?
Yeah. Because that kind of a car, you could put a plow on back of it and put it into low gear and it could plow fields.
Because they were higher up off the ground.
No, it was just the power. Just the power.
But would that have been an 8-cylinder?
No.
Six.
I don't.
Probably a 6.
6, yeah. I don't remember that. You know, no, the Royal wasn't 8 either. I don't think the Royal. You know, the real Royal, that was way out of class. I mean, you had to be a banker or lawyer or something.
To afford one of those.
Right.
My dad said that those cars weren't all that safe, the Royals, because they weren't balanced right or something. If they go around the corner, the doors would fly open.
Well, that's something I didn't know.
He didn't have one, mind you, but that's what the workers thought.
Because I know, I mean, if you owned a real Royal, I mean, that was money. I've forgotten what they did sell for.
They probably were like a Cadillac is today.
Yeah. But, I mean, this real Flying Cloud, you could plow a field all day long with that just by throwing it into your low gear.
Isn't that amazing?
So.
Did you, go ahead.
Well, I'm just about the end of my story here. I mean,
okay. We got some more questions anyway.
Well, anyway, because, I mean, when I went up to the old enamel room, that was my last move, and I got down to being the last man in the department.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I had 5 or 6 men that I was set up man for. But as time went on, sales just dropped off. I mean, they couldn't...
Yeah.
I mean...
Did you retire before the company went under?
Yes.
Right. It was 75, but it was before, and they closed their doors.
You're right. Yeah. I had 1 year of the good pension.
You did?
That they guaranteed me $550 from now on out. You know, I mean,
right.
They guaranteed me. That was just the 1 year. Of course, I wasn't the only one. But, I mean, everybody had, because after that, the union said, anyone that's got 30 years in better get out.
Take it now.
Yeah.
Take it while you can.
Well, take it out. Yeah, get it now. And, of course, you had to sign up your wife at the time to, if you want her on your pension. You see, it cost me $13 to put her on.
Oh.
But she got the $550 after they put me under. She carried on, see.
She would be your beneficiary.
Yeah. But that had to be decided.
We're going. I just wanted to know, you talked about your dad taking you when you were a kid to the clubhouse and picnics and all the other activities. Did you continue to do that when you were a worker there too with your family after World War II?
No.
You didn't do that?
That kind of phased out.
That worker activity?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. When the war came along.
That kind of changed things.
That changed things, that's right. Mm. I mean, even at the clubhouse, I mean, they didn't have dances or... they had a real dance band, I think. I thought they said they had a real... Just the employees, you know what I mean? They formed this orchestra.
I see.
But I think that dropped off. I mean, that's... The war changed a lot of things, you know what I mean? That...
Because people were working 3 shifts then too, that might have.
You're right.
Not had time to go.
You're right. Your activities were limited. You know.
Uh-huh.
Of course, you had better than we did down in Virginia. You fellas there didn't have a hard time getting a B card, I mean, or a B stamp.
For gas?
For gas, yeah. And even tires. Uh-huh. Where did we get tires? Trade your car off and find something that had good rubber on it.
Would that B card, was that just for gas, or was that, could you get tires with that too?
No, you couldn't get tires. That's where a lot of the black market came in. Down. I'm talking about Virginia now, really.
Oh.
And I'll tell you another thing. You didn't have to paint your headlights half black.
Down there.
Yeah, I mean, we're up here.
Here in Michigan? No,
and
I never
And your
saw
taillight,
that.
Head taillights had to be, the red had to be half.
Is that right?
Your traffic lights were crossed like this. I mean, just across. That's all you could see.
Imagine,
because well, we were on a seaboard town.
Yes,
I mean, on the
where you could
town.
Be conceivably attacked.
Because we were, that's right.
And the ships that, were important, war productions. So.
That's right, yeah.
Cripple of shipyards.
Of course, yeah, I mean, that my Navy Yard experiences wasn't good. I mean, the only thing I didn't enjoy was when we had to make those LST boats, you know, that, came out to shore and dropped down the front. And they all run out, you know what I mean? You know, we had to, let's see, I worked on we built six at a time, four at a time in a dry dock. You know what I mean? Where the dry dock is, you know, I mean, you
mm-hmm.
run your ship in, you let the water go in, and you run your ship in, then you let the water out, but then it holds it. It holds
right.
them up. There's a thing that holds the
while
the ship.
You're building them.
Yeah. Well, while you're cleaning the barnacles, as they call it.
Getting
the barnacles off your hull.
Yeah.
When you were small, did you remember hearing WREO, the Rio radio station, in your home? Did your dad have a crystal set? And
no, we had an Atwater can.
Oh, an
Atwater
can.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
A Cadillac of radios.
Yeah.
In those days.
Yeah, that's right. I remember we did used to have earphones. I mean, I can remember. Yeah, you're right. We lived on Chestnut Street then.
Oh.
We lived on 711 Chestnut Street.
On the north end?
No, that had been south.
Oh, it would have been. Okay.
Yeah. It would have been south of Michigan Avenue anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because that's where I went to Kalamazoo.
Oh.
See, I mean, that's when I went to Kalamazoo.
And your father was closer to the factory at that end of town?
He was, what did they say he was, 2 miles and a half, and he walked that every day, day in and day out, gone rain or shine. I think it was, wait a minute, I'll back up on that. It's when we lived on Hillsdale Street. That was further away yet.
Yeah, yeah.
He used to walk. To the Rio every day.
You were down somewhere near the Ariel's house then, weren't you? Where he was on Washington and Maine.
Maine and Washington and Maine, yeah.
Did you remember seeing the house?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever see him come out with one of his cars or?
No. Oh, who are you talking about?
Ariel?
No.
Okay.
No, I never even went to that garden that he had, you know, the Rose Garden or something.
Mm-hmm.
No. I don't know. We were, I don't know who you say, we were, family kind of didn't care or what. I don't know.
Well, of course, he wasn't there at the shop in the later years.
No,
anyway.
He wasn't, no.
He
was away a lot.
Yeah, he was away a lot, but he had even
right.
totally written the business off as far as his personal involvement in
but,
the years before that. But. He was quite a figure around town, so I thought, you know.
But while I was working in the 42, you see, White bought us because he wanted that golden engine that we planned, that we made for the Army.
Mm-hmm.
That was, everybody said that was a motor out of this world.
Hmm.
Everybody,
for the trucks?
Yeah,
for
the trucks. And we put it in our 2.5 ton truck, see?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when White tried to get it, they tried to buy us. I mean, they bought us, really. I don't know who sold us. But anyway, White wanted a 2.5-ton truck, because all he had was the bigger job, you know.
Oh, really?
Like the 5-ton, you know, you know, the big weights. He wanted a 2.5-ton truck. So, no, wait, maybe I'm getting ahead of my story. We brought out Diamond Reel in Chicago first, I think, before White. Because White didn't have that 2.5-ton truck, but the Diamond T didn't have a 2.5-ton truck either. Reel was about the only one that had the real, the 2.5-ton truck.
Mm.
The light truck, they call it. That was a lighter truck.
The lighter truck. Okay.
Yeah. So, I think Diamond T was bought out before White bought us. Because he had, he wanted all three of them put in this Golden Comet motor.
Oh, it was a Golden Comet.
Yeah. So, he wanted to put in all that 2.5-ton truck. You see, the real, the White, and Diamond,
Diamond T.
T. But then, so when they changed that name to Diamond Reel. When Diamond T came up here,
mm-hmm.
when they moved the whole factory up here, see?
Mm-hmm.
So, because it was funny to see White, Reel, and maybe a Diamond, White and the Reel, and a Diamond T, truck going down the road trying to race each other.
You probably never knew what your heading and your checks were going to say.
No,
what
that's
company,
right,
did you?
No.
Did, when you were working at Rio, did the union, the UAW, have, besides just the basic stuff they did for the bargaining and the organizing for the contracts, did they have other activities that you participated in at all?
No, none that I can recall.
Okay, down at the union hall or?
Well, not really. No. No, because things run fairly smooth during the war, see? Let me put it this way. You say, well, you had some poor rate setters. Well, let me put it this way. Maybe the rate setters weren't quite so tough on us when the war was on. Let me put it this way. Because Rio got so much for so much pieces, see? So they wanted production. That's, I'm talking about rate setters. I mean, they wanted production.
Right.
So they might have been more lenient during the war, as I say. Now, getting back, as you say, the union, they didn't have as much trouble with management, see?
Right. Right. Everybody was working together
right.
during the war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about after
production? Right, that's what I was going to ask. How about after the war, though?
Well,
60s?
we had no peace work. I mean, you
right.
know, I mean, we, you know, well, certainly on peace you had to run. But if you didn't make it, why? You say, well, what are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I, for some of the work that I've done, though, I've read that the union used to sponsor trips down to the stadiums in Detroit to see the baseball games, and they'd have movies down at the Labor Temple, and different kinds of activities for the workers. Not just
you wouldn't know that would be before the war, though, would you?
Some of that was before the war.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. I mean,
you didn't know anything about
no.
those kinds of things. Okay. No.
But during the war years, things seemed to run pretty smooth.
Right.
You know, I mean, there was no. You didn't have to have a steward saying, well, what can we do about this job? I mean, I'm doing the best I can, and my foreman is jumping on my back.
Did you have 3-year contracts?
Pardon?
Did you have 3-year contracts after the war with the union?
Yeah. Well, we had, that's right. We did have 3-year contracts. That's right.
And they were renegotiated every 3 years? No problem.
No. They weren't negotiated until it ran out.
Right. But then there were new negotiations?
Oh, yes, that's right. They would bring up something different, or maybe they wanted to do something different.
Mm-hmm. Were they on par with the levels at the big three, GM, Chrysler, Ford?
We tried. We tried, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't. We just couldn't come up with Well, we couldn't come up with general orders. I mean, we can't, as I say, the difference in the wages, we might got within 30 cents of them.
Okay.
See?
Okay.
We were the underdog.
Of course, you weren't producing as much and making as much.
That's right. You're right there.
Mm-hmm. What about, I've heard off and on through the years that the union has kind of told the workers who to vote for during a presidential election. I'm wondering.
Now, wait, you want me to get my name in here, huh?
Well, no.
Let me put it this way. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth. I will have.
But you could have done whatever you wanted, right? You were once you
but
went in that
polling
booth.
But they tried to persuade you.
Oh, that's true.
Oh,
very
sure.
True.
Oh, sure. I didn't mean they forced
well,
you.
Well, right now, listen. All right, I am the chairperson of Local 650.
Okay.
All right. I go to these meetings. All right. What do they talk about? All right. They say, let's do something for General Motors. Let's get General Motors this, and we can do this. I mean, or we're going to ask for this. What about poor old Diamond Rail? Well, that's too bad, Buster.
Oh.
You haven't got any bargaining power.
Because it's the small guys.
No, because we went broke.
Oh.
We have no bargaining power.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say to the head of our UAW, well, what can you do for us? They've come right out and said nothing.
Because you don't count much.
You gotta go through legislation.
Mm-hmm.
If you want anything.
Okay. So the fact that Rio was quiet may have been because they didn't have a whole lot of power in the union as a small company with not very much.
No. They could have been. I say they could have been operating today.
Yeah.
If we hadn't sold to Capper.
Okay.
That one man owner. Why? If he comes in there and he said, well, I says, I'm not making any money here or there, whose fault is it? Mine. It's mine. All right, let's look at it another way. He hasn't got board of directors, he hasn't got any stockholders, he hasn't got this to say, hey, I'm not making any money. What's the matter with you?
He's up in his own little world.
That's right. That's right. That's why I'm saying that if we had to, you see, he bought us for, I think it was $16 million. All right. At the time he bought us, He was in service, was making him money hand over fist. Parts.
Right.
Service parts, anything, service, truck servicing, I mean, all that.
Right.
All right, he got back his $16 million. He got back that all. Then he got to looking, and he said, well, golly, he says, I can make a lot more by just saying, hey, let's just shut the doors. Now, whether that was his philosophy, I don't know. That's mine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, whether he thought... In other words, he was a multi-millionaire on paper only. Because, you know, he asked the government to give him $8 million. I think it was. Anyway, they said, now if you can come up with a certain amount of money, we'll give it to you. But he couldn't. He couldn't come up with that money. You say, well, where is he? How is he an $8 million? How come he's a millionaire then? He had holdings here, holdings here, holdings here. But that's all.
And he was taking from one to pay the next.
Right.
Somewhere down the line.
Right. So that's why I was saying that Rio could have been operating today if it hadn't been for him.
Yeah.
Because right today, he still owes that owes our retirement fund $2 million.
Well, he does. He'll probably never pay it back.
Well, he's dead now.
He's dead, huh?
Yeah. Camper's dead.
Yeah.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
That must have been fairly recent, then.
Well, I've forgotten when, but it hasn't been too long.
Within this last year?
Oh, no, I'll go back further than that. I mean,
I would think that with his estate, then the heirs, wouldn't they also fall?
Well, I don't know. We're still in bankruptcy court. We're still in bankruptcy court. Yeah. And what I'm going to get, I'll bet you I'll be lucky if I get 10 cents on the dollar.
Because the lawyers will have to take their cut for that.
Well, we always get a letter every once in a while from the bankruptcy court saying that, well, this lawyer is so-and-so, and this lawyer is so-and-so, they got to have $2 million, they got to have some...
In order to continue the fight, or...
Sure, they're just depleting the whole money, I should say.
So there is a fund that's being drawn for this suit?
Well, it's what's left, yeah, it's what's left.
See.
What did you think, Mr. Nunheimer, what do you think is the biggest change you saw in all the years that you worked at Rio?
Well, the biggest change, I would say, was that it made it nicer for the workers.
Over time?
Yeah, by having a union.
Okay. And that improved?
They had a leg to stand on. You had a leg to stand on. Yeah, before the union come in here, you had to bargain with the owners.
Right. Foreman management.
Right.
Right.
No, I meant, you see, when I made it, shouldn't say it, but I mean, it makes it too easy.
Oh, you think it does?
Well, it made it too easy. I tell you why. You might get some boy or some worker in there that don't want to work. He don't want to work.
Yeah. Or not work as hard.
That's right.
Yeah.
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 All right. If they jumped on him, the management, I say, oh, go and get my union. Get my union up here.
Yeah. Did that happen more and more over time, you think? That kind of attitude?
No, of course not during the war, but I mean after the war. Yeah, after the war when you say you're on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You're on your own now. I mean, still say that the workers come on ahead.
Yeah.
He had a leg to stand on. I mean, he'd always go to the union, and the union would say, well, wait a minute, in our contract you said you would do this and you would do this. See, the union had that contract was their leg to stand down,
right.
See?
That's right.
They said, you're violating the contract.
Did you notice any difference in safety for the worker after the union came in? Did they try to make sure that some of the, I know you were talking about the machines being obsolete and whatnot, but do you think that they helped at all for personal safety for the workers? Being injured on the job because of their machines, or?
Well, they tried. I can't say that they didn't. They tried to make them safe, I mean, but it was just, what are you trying to do? Trying to make a new out of an old?
Maybe they're the ones who put the safety straps on and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, before the union came in, yes. I'm not too... I'm not too familiar with that because I wasn't around dangerous machinery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, our presses, I know, they were really dangerous. I mean, you had to watch them like a hawk. Because they were, you never knew, but what time that dog, instead of catching it, it would catch. It may go around, you see.
Keep on going around.
She comes again, see. Yeah. We didn't have the safest machinery. You know, that's the world.
What about sick days before the union and after? Were you allowed to have, before the union, were you allowed, if you were sick, did you have so many sick days a month, or before the union came in, and then after it came in, maybe you were allowed to have sick days?
I don't know. They always told me that they said, I bet you if you were sick, you'd be crawling in here.
Oh gosh.
That was just me personally.
Yeah.
That was me personally because I never took off. I bet you could count in all my 40 years, or 30 years rather, I bet you could count them on your hand, on one hand.
How many days
that I wasn't there. Or even being tardy. The only time we go to his tardy is when the snow got up.
And you couldn't get there.
Yeah. You remember those snows that we had? Yeah.
Yeah, we used to have some snows, didn't we?
That was the only time that I was late. I never refused not to go in. I would go in. Maybe noon.
But you'd get there.
Yeah. They said, I bet you'd come in if I had to crawl.
Now, Mr. Nunheimer, we don't... You're married, right? Because we met your wife at the Union Hall Christmas time.
Yes.
Did you have any children? Do you have any children?
One. One boy.
Just like in your family, you were the only
boy.
That's
right.
Right.
That's right.
But I don't think we ruined it. We spoiled him.
And when you were working at the Rio, did you live in Lansing?
Yes.
All the time in the area? Too?
All the time. Oh, wait a minute, I'll take it back. Yeah. Well, wait a minute, I said from 1944.
Yeah, you were in Virginia.
I was in Virginia. I was in Virginia.
But
not married.
When you were working here in Lansing at the Rio, once you were married.
Oh, yeah.
Did you own your own home?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did
you live out in the South Side?
Yeah.
Did you live with your family? Okay, I'm set. Anything else for you, Shirley?
No, I think I'm finished.
Okay, did we keep you long enough?
No, did we keep you too long? Thank you very much, Mr. Nunheimer.